back to relax with Animal Facts. I am Steph Wolf, and today I'm going to be learning with you about our furry, scaly, or possibly even slimy friends. And in today's case, it is definitely going to be a furry friend of ours, because we are covering the oh-so-wonderful talking. This, of course, is a very special listener episode dedicated to Owen Fisher, something quite rare on the show in which we only have one person who requests a particular animal. But I thank you, Owen, and I hope you enjoy your very own episode. For how to request your own episode, you can wait till the end or just go in the show notes or the description where that is all described for you. If you would like more Relax with Animal Facts, including one extra exclusive episode every week and intro-free versions of the episodes you hear here, you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts. All of your support goes towards helping the show run and helping the show's mission, which is helping you relax with animals, fulfilled. A huge shout out to George Flad for his very important work in recording ambiances across this globe. He is the reason we can go so deep into the jungles and mountains and all the rest. His work is linked in the description, and I encourage you to check him out. And now, let us begin to wind down a little bit. If this is your first episode, I welcome you to the Animal Podcast family with open arms. It's a growing family, a loving family, and one that encompasses all sorts of countries and continents. It's pretty awesome. If you are returning, you know exactly what I am going to be asking of you. I have three primary exhortations for you. The first is that you put on a good pair of hiking shoes. We are certainly going to be needing those for where we are going today. My second encouragement to you, which is arguably the most important, is that you realize perhaps where you are carrying some tension. Is it in the hands, the feet, the shoulders, the neck? Regardless of where it is that you carry tension, my encouragement to you is the same. Do your best to simply let go and relax whatever it is that you are holding on to. You can bring up in your mind some jello. I sometimes refer to the listener base here, to this Animal Podcast family, as the Jello Squad. And that is because we become jello on this podcast. Jello has no tension, it just kind of wiggles around, which is what we want. It is pretty difficult to relax when we are stiff as a board. In case you don't actually know where you carry tension, which is entirely reasonable, there's one little exercise that I find really helps. You can start in your mind scanning from the bottom of your feet all the way up to the top of the head. So that would mean that you would first start by relaxing the feet, the ankles, the calves, the quads, and the hamstrings, and just going all the way until you're at the top of your head. This, of course, helps you become jello, but it also gives you information as to where you carry tension. So now that you have become jello alongside me, we can go on to the final exhortation, which is to give your mind permission to wander and journey with me into the eastern Himalayas, where the talking resides. This environment is nothing short of surreal. Mountains have a peculiar ability, at least in me, to stir to awe in ways that other environments maybe take a little bit more time to do. Maybe it's the sense of bigness, if that's a word. You feel kind of small amongst all of these beautiful mountains, but we are not just here for the scenery. We are here to see an animal that makes this environment all the more special, the takin. It's worth mentioning right off the top that it seems disputed as to how to pronounce their name properly. Some say taken, some say takin, some say takin. I'm saying takin, which I hope is correct. That was the majority pronunciation that I found on the internet, and so I hope that it is simply the correct one. The scientific name of the takin is Budorcus taxicolor. This scientific name, of course, like all others, is comprised of some Greek and Latin roots. Budorcus comes from the Greek words bous, meaning ox, and dorcus, meaning gazelle or antelope. The latter portion of their scientific name, taxicolor, is derived from the Latin words taxus, which is yew tree, and color, meaning having the color of a yew. Yew here, by the way, is spelt Y-E-W. So just from their scientific name, we can deduce this is an animal that looks like a mix between an ox and a gazelle, while having the color of a yew. That is why I find scientific names so cool. It's amazing how much you can already know about an animal before even Googling them. We are here in the eastern Himalayas. These creatures are found in Asia, in South Asia, Southeast Asia, and East Asia. Countries like Bhutan, China, India, and Myanmar is home to this creature. They live in a variety of habitats that include forested valleys and rocky, grass-covered alpine zones. They seem to like heights, and they are sort of made for it. So if there is any possibility you have not already Googled this creature, let me describe them for you. They have horns that are reminiscent of wildebeests, a snout of a moose, a bear's tail, and a bison's body. They kind of look like a Dr. Seuss character, as some articles have said. This is a very strong, big, hoofed mammal that is also known as a goat antelope, due to the fact that it shares characteristics with both goats and antelopes. They are, however, most genetically related to sheep, particularly the Barbary sheep from North Africa. Their bodies, right from the get-go, give this sense of being extremely muscular. This, equipped with those spectacular horns, make them quite a sight to behold, maybe even stirring more awe than these mountains themselves. Although they are equipped with very muscular bodies, if we just look at how they move, they naturally move pretty slowly. But if they are angry or scared, they can quickly turn that slow pace into some swift reactions. They can leap from one rock to another with ease. If they detect any danger, the takin can issue a very loud cough that sends the whole herd fleeing for cover. They'll find some dense underbrush and then just lie down to avoid being spotted. They're also capable of producing a terrifying roar or bellow. While the sound can be pretty terrifying, looking at their face might be a cause for laughter. They appear a bit silly when they do this. Their mouths are open with their tongues sticking out, but they really do mean business. Now, this environment is not for beginners. The Himalayan mountains provide a ton of general challenges to animals that live there. Takins have many characteristics that allow them to stay warm and dry throughout the harsh winters in these steep Himalayan mountains. To be able to deal with the cold, they produce a thick secondary coat, which they lose throughout the summertime. They're also equipped with an impressive nose. The broad, moose-like snout contains enormous sinus chambers. This isn't the first animal we've covered with such a mechanism, but that doesn't make this any less amazing. These enormous sinus chambers warm the air inhaled before it even reaches the lungs. This allows them to maintain their body temperature a lot easier. Without such sinus chambers, they would lose a significant quantity of body heat just by breathing in. By consequence, it would require them to eat a ton more food, and it would make life here generally unpleasant. Their skin is also greasy in order to provide additional protection. They don't have skin glands, but their skin secretes an oily, bitter-tasting material that serves as a natural raincoat in storms and fog. If one was to visit the San Diego Zoo, for example, takins brush themselves against the sides of their homes, leaving greasy streaks. Perhaps one of their most important qualities are their split hooves. This allows them to walk around in their homes more freely with that rocky terrain. It can be tremendously difficult with just a flat hoof to be able to traverse such an environment. But with those split hooves, they can jump and skip around with ease. If we were ever to get close to a takin, you could notice a particular smell. They have an odor that is described as a bizarre blend of horse and musk, which doesn't seem too bizarre given their appearance. Both males and females have shiny black crescent-shaped horns that grow from the center of their huge heads, reaching lengths of up to 35 inches or 90 centimeters. These animals can travel in enormous herds. Each springtime, they will form such a herd and move up the mountains to the tree line, which is above 14,000 feet, around 4,300 meters. So as cooler weather approaches and food becomes a little more scarce, the takins retreat to forested valleys. They will follow the same paths up, down, and across the mountains. This forms a network of well-worn routes through the dense growths of bamboo and rhododendrons, leading to their natural salt licks and grazing places. These seem to be creatures of habit. In terms of their diet, we can rest easy because they're not carnivorous. Quite the contrary, they eat a wide variety of plants, including alpine, deciduous and evergreen. They will eat pretty much any foliage that is within reach of their mouth. They are not all that picky when it comes to food. Some of this foliage includes the rather strong leaves of evergreen rhododendrons and oaks, willow and pine bark, bamboo leaves, and a range of new growth herbs. They can also easily stand on their hind legs and prop their front legs against a tree to reach higher plants if they have to. If the best leaves are out of reach, takins have been known to utilize their muscular bodies to push over small trees to get them closer. To me, they are sounding like the king of the Himalayas. Takins, just like cows and sheep, are ruminants who pass food into their first stomach, the rumen, when they swallow it. That term ruminants is just referring to creatures that have the rumen. All of the microbes in the rumen aid digestion of very minute food particles. The larger particles enter a second chamber, which regurgitates these particles, known as cud, back into the mouth. This is where they are chopped into pieces small enough to digest effectively. We will often find them eating in the early morning and the late afternoon. They spend the day under lush vegetation, only venturing out really on gloomy or foggy days. When they're not eating, they will typically rest. It might look like they do 100 push-ups a day, but that doesn't seem to be the case. When they do rest, the takin sleeps with its head resting on top of its extended front feet, similar to many of your dogs out there. If we ever see just a singular takin, we can probably guess that they are older males. Generally, takins, as we learned, dwell in groups, sometimes in tiny family groups of 20 individuals or so, but during that summer period is when they form those impressive herds of up to 300 individuals. But the elderly males may be more solitary than any of the others. One amazing thing about the takin are the ways in which they communicate with one another. They can convey information not only through a variety of noises, but through a range of body positions. These visual signals play a key role in how they communicate with one another. A male, for example, demonstrates dominance by standing up straight and raising his neck and chin. To accentuate his bulk, he may place himself crosswise to another takin. A takin's aggressive posture is head down, with its neck horizontal and rigid, the head and the horns hooked to one side. An extended period of eye contact between individuals frequently results in a lowered head, an arched back, snorting, and even head crashing. One other, maybe more gross way in which they communicate with one another is through the aroma of urine. It provides a ton of information to individuals, and they can get pretty creative in the ways in which they communicate with urine. I'm not going to go too deep into it here, but if that's something that interests you, you can do your own research. This fact is, of course, not idiosyncratic or not unique to the takin. Scent marking and other sorts of things are incredibly common in the animal kingdom. the talking just has some interesting ways of going about it. Females will give birth to a single child in early spring. Twins are fairly uncommon for them. And within just 3 days of birth, a talking child can follow its mother through most terrains. This is especially crucial if their predators, bears or wolves, for example, are in the area and maybe chasing them around. If it ever happens that a child is taken from its mother within the first 2 weeks, it makes a terrified noise reminiscent of a lion cub. The mother responds with a low, guttural call, which then brings the child running back to her. Talking babies are substantially darker than adults at birth in order to provide protection and cover from predators. They even have a dark stripe that runs down their back that fades as they grow. Their coat will slowly get lighter and lighter in color, longer and shaggier as they age. The talking child begins eating solid foods and ceases nursing at the age of just 2 months. However, it may remain close to mom until her next calf is born. It is when the youngsters are around just 6 months old that their horns begin to sprout. The juvenile or children talkings are pretty funny. They love to play. They kick up their heels, headbutt, and play with one another. Like many other creatures, play is an important part of life and one that teaches them a lot as they do it. I also would like to mention that while they can communicate vocally, they mostly tend to stay quiet. It is just that when they do speak, they use several unique noises, including snorts, deep notes, booming whistles from their remarkable nose, a guttural burping sound that indicates a talking wants something. They make a deep noise similar to a whoop sound in order to either warn or assert authority. A mother can call her child with a high-pitched RRR sound, and males can emit that thunderous, guttural yell when fighting with other males. We already learned about that loud cough that sends the whole herd scrambling for cover, too. The point is that the talking, if it wants to, can communicate in so many different ways, with a variety of vocal noises, with odor, with postural displays. It is pretty awesome. And now let's move to the name of the animal, talking. What does it mean, or where does it come from? Its name is derived from the Mishmi language spoken by the Mishmi people of Arunachal Pradesh in northeastern India. I hope I pronounced that correctly. The term talking is used by the local population to refer to this unique and large goat antelope found in the eastern Himalayas. The animal's distinctiveness and the region it inhabits contribute to the name's origin and usage. So I am not sure if I am pronouncing its name close to the way the Mishmi language uses it, but I certainly hope so. And now let's move on to the dad joke portion of the episode. Because this creature is kind of niche, I couldn't find any online. So naturally, I asked ChatGPT to make me a few dad jokes about the talking. I am going to read the one that didn't make me physically ill. Check this out. So, for this joke, it kind of demands that I say the creature's name in a way that I haven't been this whole episode, but just take it for the joke. What did the taken say to the hiker? Take it easy, I'm just taking a stroll. Now, I think that this is warrant to just close up the project entirely. With dad jokes like that, I'm unsure that AI will ever take over the world. But anyways, let us move on to the next portion of the episode, in which I read your Spotify replies. After every episode on Spotify, you have the ability to interact with a question that I post. The last one was pretty interesting. If you had to choose an animal to be the ambassador of Earth to an alien civilization, which animal would you choose and why? Rainbow said, a platypus. It can do everything, lay eggs, produce milk, sweat milk, and it has a poisonous claw. It would probably also beat the aliens in a weirdness competition. I like that strategy, just freak out these hypothetical aliens as much as possible. I imagine that we could then say, this is our most normal animal. Just wait until you see our weirdest. Nina contributes and says, a seagull. I'd just watch and laugh. Seagull is a pretty amazing answer. If this hypothetical civilization had any sort of French fries or any version thereof, you know the seagulls would just swarm. Lottie Dunn wrote, a duck, an animal that represents land, water, and air all in one animal, and I think that would be cool. I never thought of a duck that way. That is a pretty cool thought, Lottie, and I think it would warrant being the ambassador for Earth. If just Earth needed a flag, we could just throw a duck on there. I would not be opposed to that. And now I'm going to read a few Instagram comments on the last post. If you guys are not following the Instagram, every single episode upload, I put on a Q&A just like I do on Spotify. It allows me to involve all of you, perhaps those who are not on Spotify or whatever the case may be. I simply asked, how did you find the show? JDC_artwork said, I needed to relax after being overwhelmed. True crime wasn't cutting it for once. Maybe I'm weird, but true crime is definitely not something I would want to relax to. I mean, to each their own, but I'm happy you found the show, JDC. There is definitely no true crime here, apart from maybe trash bandits like raccoons and things like that. Dale D2s wrote, I liked this episode. This was referring to the Asian palm civet. I honestly don't think I have listened to any I didn't like. Some of the older episodes where you haven't slowed down the speed and intonations of your voice were a bit challenging to relax to, but still great info to be had. Thank you for so many episodes. Thank you, Dale, for that piece of feedback. And I have to say that many of you are a lot more charitable with the older episodes than I am. I just cannot listen to it. I actually am a bit afraid to even play them. It has been a thought in my mind to just delete the older episodes and make new ones, and I probably will make updates to certain episodes like the orangutan, for example, but I'll probably leave them up there just for the historical record. And now, let me move on to the last bit of communication with you guys, which is your reviews on Apple Podcasts. This one is coming from Apex Rail, who wrote all the way from the United States of America. And Apex wrote, "I listen to your podcast every night. It is the best podcast in the world. One of my mom's favorite animals is the fox, the mascot of your podcast. Love you, Carl, age 7. What a kind and sweet review from you, Carl. I'm so glad that you like the show as you do, and even that your mom's favorite episode is our mascot. The old mascot was actually a grizzly or just some sort of brown bear. We only changed to the fox after I polled a lot of you and found that the red fox was more representative of the show. So thank you, Carl, for your wonderful words. Thank you for being a part of what makes the show awesome. And I look forward to many more adventures together. I encourage you, if you are on Spotify, to reply to the Q&As, if you have Instagram, to reply to the new episodes that always have a Q&A, or if you are on Apple Podcasts, leaving a review is a great way to interact with me and to help the show. We even had a few recent one stars after the whole ad debacle, and I so appreciate all reviews, whether they are scathingly negative or overwhelmingly positive. They help make me as a host better and the show better for everyone. Let me actually read one more review. That was one of those scathingly negative ones. Dr. Capybara wrote, "I always loved this podcast. It was perfect without any ads. It's the only podcast I've ever liked, and now you've ruined it," with a very angry face. Reviews like this really helped me to reflect on the decision and on the whole long-term thing with the show. So when I encourage both positive and negative reviews, I really mean it. It doesn't particularly bring me joy to read scathing criticism, but I recognize just how important it is to keep myself and the show in check. After all, it is for you guys. And so if something makes you angry, let me know. If you would like to request an animal for a future episode, you can do so by going to relaxwithanimalfacts.com and clicking on the Submit and Animal Request tabs. To reach out to me, Steph Wolf, for any other reason, you can do so by sending me an email at relaxwithanimalfacts@gmail.com, or you can send me an Instagram message at relaxwithanimalfacts on Instagram. If you would like more Relax with Animal Facts, including exclusive episodes, all while supporting the show's mission of increasing people's wonder of animals and relaxing, you can go to patreon.com/relaxwithanimalfacts. There is even a free trial, so you can try it out, listen to however much you can, and if you don't like it, you can always just cancel. So I hope to see you guys there. A huge shout out to George Vlad for the ambiances used in today's episode. His work is linked in the description and I encourage you to check him out. The facts used in this episode came from animals.sandiegozoo.org and animalia.bio. What an amazing animal we have learned about today. The taquin, an extremely impressive creature just from the looks of them. And there were so many more impressive things that were just hidden in the background. But naturally, as we learn more about animals, our wonder increases naturally or as a response. And that is probably one of the most important goals of this show. To increase together our wonder of animals, of the natural world, to cause us to think, to meditate on it, to be grateful for the world that we live in, all of those good things. And so, I am extraordinarily grateful that you have taken the time to join me on this adventure today, and I look forward to the next adventure together with the next animal. Take care.